We're on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph. But before we begin, I am hesitant to leave Daf Vav. So let me point out something here that should call our attention. If you take a look on Daf Vav, Amud Aleph, the Gemara wants to know if a person has to leave his house before Pesach in such a way that he won't be there for Bedikas Chametz, is he obligated in Bedikas Chametz? So who remembers the magic number?
30 days.
Excellent, 30. The Gemara spends a lot of time trying to figure out why is it that the determining date is 30 days before Pesach. So let's go over this. He's leaving his house before Pesach. And according to Rava, and we pass him like Rava, he has no intention to be back in his house for Pesach. Nevertheless, if he left within a 30-day period before the Chag, he's obligated in Bedika. If he left 31 days before the Chag, then he's parted from Bedika.
If before Pator, if within...
He's exempt from the mitzvah.
If more than 30 days is exempt.
Correct.
Okay.
Now the Gemara asks, why the number 30? And the Gemara says, we're already becoming aware of Chometz 30 days before the Chag. And why is that so? Because we have a rule, Sholim v'darshim v'hilchas ha-chag, kodem ha-chag, kodem ha-pesach shloshim yom. And the Gemara derives that on Daf Vavam and Beis from Psukim with regard to Moshe Rabbeinu. So we have this 30-day deadline. So Rabosai, if I were to ask you the following question, when does the Shas Chovaso begin? When is the moment of Chiyuv Bedika? Again, if all things are equal, I'll be there for the 14th. There's no reason to be bodik before the 14th. But if I'm not going to be there the 14th, when is the point of transition? From that point and on, I have a Chiyuv Bedika.
Returning or
No. I'm saying, if I'm going to be in my house on the 14th, that's when I have to do the bedikah. There's no need to do the bedikah before the 14th.
Okay.
But if I ask you a different question, I'm not going to be in my house on the 14th. So when is the moment of chiyuv bedikah?
Not before you leave.
The sixth hour before.
So I thought the answer would be 30 days before the chag. What do I mean? If I leave my house within a 30-day period, they've already clamped down a chiyuv on me because I have to be bodik the chametz. And in fact, I'm going to be bodik the chametz. Let's say 29 days before the chag that night, I'll be bodik the chametz. Then the next morning, I take my voyage. If, on the other hand, I leave my house before the 30th day, before Pesach, then I'm not chayv in bedika. So it seems to me that the critical moment of transition for a chiyuv bedika is the 30th day. Now, it doesn't mean that on the 30th day I have to do bedikah. Obviously, we're going to do the bedikah when? On the 14th of Nisan. But if I cannot postpone the bedikah, then I'm already chayav in bedikah. So if I'm chayav in bedikah 30 days before the chag, I can postpone that chiyuv bedikah. The halacha doesn't press me. There's nothing urgent, and I can delay my bedikah until the 14th. But if I cannot delay my bedika, then I'm chayiv in bedika. Then 31 days is no chayiv bedika. Now, if you'll turn back to Daf Dalid, the sugya that we did 2 weeks ago, it occurs to me that you get a totally different impression. Why? The maskir owns the house, and he rents it out to the socher. And the Gemara vacillates who has to do the bedika. So the Gemara gives a svara. The maskir should do the bedika because it's his chametz. The Selcher who's renting the house should do the because he's going to live there during Pesach and it's going to be Chometz Bershuso. So Rashi says that both of them are chayav. There's enough, there's ample reason to generate a chiyuv on the maskir insofar as it's his chametz. There's ample reason to generate a chiyuv on the socher insofar as he's going to live with the chametz in his house. So now Rashi says, this mitzvah, who's obligated in the mitzvah? So the Gemara's answer to this, the final solution to this, is that it depends upon the Mesiris Mafteches. Who's holding on to the keys at the time of the Chiyuv Bdika? Meaning, if the Maskir is still holding on to the keys, even though, let's say, he signed a rental agreement with the Socher already on the 13th of Nisan, but nevertheless, he, the Maskir, the owner of the house, is still holding on to the keys, he's Chayv in Bdika. Why? Because when the sun sets on the 14th of Nisan, he, the Maskir, is holding on to the keys. If, on the other hand, the Socher picks up the keys even in advance of his rental agreement, so that when the sun sets on the 14th of Nisan, he, the Socher, is holding on to the keys, he's got to do the Bedikah. That's the final Maskana. And this is all codified in the Shulchan Aruch. So now I ask myself the following question. When is the critical moment of what's called Shas Chavosa, the inception of the Chiyuv Bedikah? Anybody? Sunset of?
The 14th.
Now wait a second. We just finished saying that the Chiyuv Bedikah starts 30 days before the Chag. Who's holding on to the keys in all events, in all cases, 30 days before the Chag? The Maskir, correct? So I don't understand. If 30 days before the Chag, there's already a Chiyuv Bedikah, which means that if I'm leaving my house and I won't be able to do the Bedikah in its time at 14th, then I'm Chayv and Bedikah already now, right, 30 days before Pesach. So then why does the Gemara say that whether the Maskir is Chayv or the Socher is Chayv, all hinges on who's holding on to the Maftech at what hour? At the moment of Shkia the 14th, as if to say the moment of Shkia the 14th is the transitional moment of Chiyuv Bedikah. Why not say that it should depend upon who's holding on to the keys 30 days before the Chag, and obviously who's holding on to the keys 30 days before the Chag? The Maskir.
Two different situations.
Go ahead, what do you want to say? No, you have an answer?
Two different situations. In one case...
Wait, I just want to know one thing. Before you give me your answer, are you bothered by the question, or you're not even bothered by the question?
You
know, I need some empathy here. Before you answer my question, I have to know if you feel my pain. That's
I feel,
all.
I feel your pain. I agree.
Yeah. Okay, good. But if you feel my pain, then you can give me an answer.
But in the case on Vav, where he's going on a trip, he has no intention of handing the keys over to anyone. So he's going to hold the keys at sunset on the 14th, but he's leaving. No one's going to be in his apartment during the 14th. It would be different if he's leaving and then intends to rent it to someone, but he's not renting it to anyone. So he still has an obligation, and he remains with the obligation to do something on the 14th. Yes or no? So therefore, that's where the 30-day rule applies. Otherwise, the obligation...
Do you mind, Don, if I say it in my language? But I think it's going to be the same. You'll tell me if this is what you had in mind.
You'll say it better than me, sure.
What I want to say is the following. That in the case of Maskir V'socher, the issue is, who's going to do the Bedikah? In the case of Shloshim Yom Konam HaChag, the issue is there going to be a Bedikah? Let me explain. When you have two people, each of which is a, shall I say, a first-class candidate for Bedikah, then you have the situation of the Maskir and the Socher. And as we said before, there's sufficient reason to obligate the Maskir, there's sufficient reason to obligate the Socher. The Bedikah is going to be done. The question only is, who's going to do the Bedikah? And for that, the critical moment is the 14th of Nisan. When we have two people, both of whom are equally obligated in Bedikas Chometz, each for his own reason, respectively, him because he owns the Chometz, him because he's living with the Chometz, now the issue is, not will there be a Bedikah. Imagine, Rabosai, if this was an animated Walt Disney movie, okay? The bias itself is crying out, I need a bedika. Somebody has to do the bedika for me, right? Can you picture it? It'll make a little bit of a movie out of it. And now we have to determine, okay, the bais needs bedika. Who's going to do the bedika? So you have two people vying for it, so we're going to say, look, the 14th is going to be the critical moment. But in the case on Daf Vav that we learned just a few days ago, where a person is checking out of his house, I have a much more fundamental question. Does the bais have a right, in quotation marks, have a right to scream out, I need bedika? And the answer is, wait a minute. The bias doesn't need bedika just because the bias needs bedika. You know, it's not just that some sort of abstract, you know, concept that the bias needs bedika. The bias needs bedika because somebody's going to be living in the house. Oh, so now I have to ask the question, what do you mean somebody's going to be living in the house? At what point is somebody going to be living in the house? Here the Gemara comes up with a different shas chovoso. Someone is going to be living in the house if he's living in the house on Pesach. But wait a minute, he's not going to be living in the house on Pesach. The answer is, on Pesach is going to be a stretch. We're going to expand this definition of on Pesach as far as the 30-day period is concerned. Is there someone connected to this bias? So if I'm asking the question, is the bias, shall I say, justified in demanding a bedika, then I have to know, is there somebody going to occupy the bias? And when is that occupation of the bias relevant to bedika? The relevant period of time is what? 30 days. But if I'm asking not does the bias need bedika, somebody's living in the bias, there's no question about it. But the question is, we have two people, both of whom are equal candidates to pick up the actual chova to implement that bedika, then we're going to ask the question about the 14th.
You're not suggesting, let's say you go away 3 days before Pesach, let's say. You're not suggesting that you have to do the bedika 30 days beforehand.
No. Again, whenever we say the zechi of bedika, it's not urgent. Up until the 14th, it's not urgent. So you have that span of time. But the question is the bias machayev in bedika or not? And the answer to that question is 30 days. If you're asking a question about the bias and whether the bias is machayev in bedika, then I have to know, is there someone living in the house within that 30-day period? If, on the other hand, not only is the bias chayev in bedika, but the question is which gavra, which individual, which persona is obligated to implement that chayev bedika, then we're going to look at the 14th. Now, on the top of Daf Zayin, which is the Gemara we did yesterday, the Gemara tries to figure out when is the time for bittul. When is the best time for bittul? And the Gemara comes to the conclusion that here are the ground rules. The ground rules are that the best time bedika has to fit the following description. It's got to be a time which is connected to the destruction of the chametz. We can't just pick a moment of time out of the sky and obligate the people of bedika. They're going to forget about bittul. You know, we have to get the bittul on their minds. You know, have them worry and concerned about a bittul. So the Gemara thinks, well, maybe we could attach it to the afternoon of the 14th, because that's when the Torah requires me to get rid of my chametz. Maybe we could attach it to an hour earlier when the Rabbanon required me to get rid of my chametz. That's called the beginning of the sixth hour. The Gemara says that these two time periods are too late for bittul, because once the Torah has already, or even the Rabbanon have already prohibited you in chametz, it's out of your rishus, you can't do bittul. The Gemara suggests, well, maybe at the beginning of the fifth hour, which means the end of the fourth hour, we call it 10 a.m., the Gemara says that's not attached to any moment in time. So basically the Gemara's conclusion is the best time for bittul is when? The night of the 14th. Because that's when he's doing the bedika. So we're going to attach bittul to bedika. So Rabosai, one of you gentlemen, I don't remember who it was, I'm not trying to steal any credit here, asked me the following question. Why do we have bittul not only at night? Michael, you asked me this question?
Well, I was thinking of it. So
why is there a second bittul in the daytime, meaning at the time of Sreifas Chametz? So I gave you the following answer. I said, you know what, the Gemara has a Hava, meaning that maybe we could do bittul in the daytime on the 14th, right before we burn the chametz, or at the time that we burn the chametz. And even though the Gemara rejects that, but nevertheless it was a havamin of the Gemara, and that itself justifies this minhag of doing bittul again at the time of Sreifas Chametz. But you know, I wasn't able to sleep calmly last night. I had a bad night. I'm not going to blame it on my new granddaughter who's colica, and it's really rough. No matter what time I wake up, she's crying anyway. So, but we'll get by that. It may take a few months. But I was bothered by this, and I came up with a following thesis: that what do we do with our chametz between Bidika and Sreifa? Right, we have, let's say, how many hours? Let's call it 12 hours. So it's even, 18. It's more than that. 18 hours, Steve? Okay, 18 hours. Now, wait a second. You know, some of you may be familiar with the minhag of putting out 10 pieces of chametz for the bedikah. Okay, if you're not familiar with that minhag, then you look for chametz. Let's assume you found a piece of chametz. You got lucky, you know. So whatever it is, so you put away that chametz, you tie it up, you know, make sure it's hanging from the rafters. No one should get a hold of it, and then you burn it the next day. But what happens? I don't know if it ever happened to you, if one of the 10 pieces of chametz is gone, you can't find it, for whatever reason, you know, or maybe you tied it up on the rafters and it fell down and then a weasel came along and dragged it away. Right? Well, let me give you another scenario. What if I leave some chametz in my kitchen because I want to eat breakfast the next morning? Right? We're allowed to eat chametz until 10 a.m. or whatever time it is. So now, the bittul chametz that I did following the bedika is no longer relevant. Why? Because I was mevatel all the chametz that I thought I was going to go and destroy. Little did I know that this other chametz, which maybe I had stashed away and designated for breakfast the next day, maybe I bought a piece of chametz, there's new chametz coming into my reshus during that 18-hour period. That's why we want a second bittul. And I'll tell you the truth, I like this pshat better than what I sold you yesterday. All right. So now, Rabbosei, we're about to start a very profound sugya. I raise my eyes in prayer to Hashem that we'll be able to survive this sugya. This is probably the most challenging sugya. For those who are here for the first time, I should have told you to come tomorrow. Tomorrow's a little bit easier, but today is really a challenge. But in Mirtz Hashem, we'll get by it. Now, I don't want to spoil this sugya. That was a pun, because this sugya is about spoiled chametz. Okay. And this is called the sugya of Pascha Ipsha. I'm not going to write it on the board because you'll see it right away in the Gemara. Omar Rava Barav Hunam Rav. So we're on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph now. And if you can count down approximately 15 lines down from the top, I didn't actually count it, you'll see the two dots after the word, the first two words in the line is Shema Mina. And if you can just show me by, you know, just you pick, if you don't mind picking up a finger here, just one finger is enough that you got the place.
No.
No. Okay, so again, I would say about 15, 20 lines down from the top of Zayin Omid Aleph, you'll see the first two words in the line are Shema Mina, and then you'll see two dots.
Okay.
17 lines down from the top? Okay, great. Kiminyan Tov. Fine. So the Gemara says the following. Oh, wait a minute. Sorry, I skipped the Gemara. And because I was so involved in preparing this sugya, so I skipped the Gemara. Okay. So let's count down again from the top of the Amud. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 lines down from the top. I don't want to skip that Gemara. And the Gemara says the following. Now, the word lebasar isura lo matzi mevatli, that phrase is just a repeat, or the Gemara reiterates what the final conclusion of the previous sugya, that we cannot have bittul midday on the 14th because it's too late for bittul. Why is it too late for bittul? Because it's lebasar isura, it's after the shasa isur. And the Gemara already pointed out on Daf Vav Amid Beis that after the Shasa Yisur, it's not yours, it's not your Rishus. Lo Motzi Mevatale. Now here you add a question mark, and is that really true? Is that really true? For Asanya, I'm going to quote to you a brisa that is absolutely contradictory to that principle. Hayoshev v'beis hamedrash. A man is sitting and learning. We'll see exactly why the brisa gives that case, but maybe it's because people who are learning sometimes are a little bit like, you know, the absent-minded professor. And Viniskar, all of a sudden, it's Erev Pesach, he's sitting in the Beis Medrash, and all of a sudden, wow, he bangs himself on the head, he reminds himself, Yesh Chametz B'Toch Pesach. He's got Chametz in his house. Okay, so wait a minute. Was he Mevatel his Chametz? No, he wasn't Mevatel his Chametz. So what should he do on the spot? He's far away from his house. Mevatlo Beliba. Let him do Bito Belev. Now, Rabosa, yesterday we had a long discussion, if you recall, there are Rashi's going this way, going that way, about whether Bittul requires an enunciation, a verbal declaration. This Gemara is quoted by a lot of the poskim as a proof that you don't even need a verbal declaration, because the Gemara uses the term belibo. It's enough that he mentally is mevatel his chametz. But again, as I said yesterday, this is a gigantic issue in the poskim, whether or not it's enough, or do you need an amira declaration. Then the Braisa continues and says, Echad Shabbos v'Echad Yontif. That this halacha that he will be mevatel his chametz applies both on Shabbos and on Yontif. So the Gemara says the following, Bishlema Shabbos, I understand what the case of Erev Pesach and it happens to be Shabbos and he reminds himself of the chametz that he has in his house. Mishkaches, so it's a case, kigon shechal arba solios b'shabbos. So it means that the first day of Pesach is Motzi Shabbos Sunday. Friday, which is the 14th, and the Torah says get rid of your chametz, is Shabbos. Shabbos coincides with Erev Pesach, which is a very famous sugya later on about when exactly does he have to eat matzah? I mean, he can't eat matzah because it's Erev Pesach. He can't eat chametz because it's Erev Pesach. So how does he manage? In any event, this man on Shabbos finds out that he reminds himself he has chametz in his house. So what does he do? He does bittul. Eliyantiv. Now we have to be very meticulous about the Bryce. The Bryce has another scenario with this Talmud Chacham who's sitting in the Beis HaMedrash, reminds himself he has chametz. It says Echad Yantiv. Now Yantiv means Basar Isurahu. It's already Asur. He's in the throes of Yontif. How could the Brice allow him to make Bittul on Yontif itself? We have a principle that Labasar Yisrael Matsu Yavatale. Amar Avacha Bar Yaakov, Hacha, what's the scenario that this Brice is addressing? B'Talmid Yoshev Lifnei Rabo Askina. We're talking about a case of a Talmud. Now, when a student is sitting in front of his Rebbe, he should be in a state of awe, a state of fear, and what's going to be? You know, he reminds himself that he has chametz. So Rav Acha Bar Yaakov says, no, you misunderstood. The Brice is not talking about a case where he reminds himself he has chametz, but nizkar sheyesh isa megulgeles besof beso. Isa megulgeles means he's already added the water to the flour, and Megulgeles means, Gilgul means kneading, where a K N, right? He kneaded the dough. And right now it's not chametz, but it's immediately going to become chametz. Let's say if 18 minutes goes by after the water is added to the flour, it becomes chametz. But adayin lo chmitza, it didn't become chametz yet. Misyare shematachmitz. If he waits until the end of the shir, when his Rebbe finally lets him go, and I know some Rebbeim who'll keep you here for hours, right? Okay. No, that's not, present company is not included, but so he's afraid that by the time the Rebbe lets him go, it's going to be too late to already have a fully baked piece of chametz. So therefore, kadim umevatale, he can recite bittul, or think of bittul, bittul belev, before it became chametz. So again, he hasn't yet violated the Isur, Mikami de Tachmitz. So this is really interesting. I mean, Rav Acha really puts this whole brisa into a whole different framework. Well, we thought it was a case where he reminded himself that he has chametz in his house, and therefore we ask the question: how is it possible to validate bittul on yontif? There is no bittul after Shas Yisuro, and the answer is this is not chametz, not yet chametz. And if it's not yet chametz, then bittul is operative. So we see a big chiddush here in this Gemara, and that is that you could be mevatel a dough that's about to rise, it's about to ferment, it's not yet chametz. And if it's not yet chametz, the Torah is not, even though it's yontif, the Torah has not yet imposed the iser on it. So as long as it's an iser megulgeles and it hasn't come to chibutz yet, it's not chametz, and therefore it's not osur. If it's not osur, you could be mevatel. Now I'm not sure. It could be, this is more for our 11:45 shiur, that it could be the maisa, the act of bittul will be chal later on when it becomes chametz, when it's simultaneous with its becoming chametz, that's when the bittul will be operative. I'm not sure if you could be mevatel something. You remember the Ramban that we spent a great deal of time on. Bittul is not hefker, and if bittul is not a hefker, it's some sort of magical, the Ramban calls it hafka shem chametz, that in Orachayim the Torah says it's not yours if you mevatel it. That applies to chametz, but here it's not chametz. So apparently the Maisa Bittul will take place now when it's a dough before it rises, and then the actual Bittul will be Chal with the moment that it becomes Chametz. When the Torah says, I want to put it back into your Rishus, and he says, no, I don't want it in my Rishus. But the question that we want to ask is, where does this, you know, when the Gemara has what's called an Ukimta, you know, it's got to be somewhat related to the text of the Brisa. I mean, the text of the Brisa gives us no indication, no clue whatsoever, that we're talking about a Talmud who's sitting at the feet of his Rebbe on Yontif. He's afraid to leave the presence of his Rebbe prematurely, and he has a dough that's about to rise. I mean, the statement. It doesn't say that in the Brisa. The Brisa says, Nizkar sheyesh lo chametz b'toch beiso. He has chametz in his house.
But you have to. There's no, because it says yontif in the Brisa.
Right.
What other explanation could there be?
Maybe it means that you could make bittul even on yontif, even after Shas Yisuro. You know, you've been giving me this gospel. You know, and it's like you have a Kabbalah here for Moshe Mitzrayim that there's no bittul after Shas Yisuro. How do you know such a thing? On the contrary, the Brisa seems to indicate you can't be mevatel the chametz after Shas Yisuro. So Gemara comes up with this fantastical ukimta of what the Brisa is talking about. Is there any indication whatsoever in the Brisa that that's the case? So Gemara says, Dekanami. Dekanami means I'll prove it to you. If you analyze the Brisa carefully, you'll come to the same conclusion, says Rav Acha, that I came to. Why? Dekatani, the Brisa, mentions the following, Yoshev b'sof beis ha-medrash. In other words, that the reason for this whole situation here is because he's sitting in the Beis HaMedrash. Had he been at home, apparently, there would be no need for an urgent solution, and he could take care of it. Do you follow it? Rabbi say, here's the Gemara's kasha, Rav Acha's kasha. Why did the Brisa have to couch itself in terms of a Talmud who's Yoshev Beis HaMedrash, which means that he's sitting in a place where it's impossible for him to do what he normally would do in this case had he been at home? What would he have done if he would have been at home? It's only because he's in the Beis HaMedrash and he can't bake the dough, meaning if he could bake the dough immediately, it would become what? Matzah, right? It wouldn't have to become chametz. The problem is that he's not available to arrest the process of chimutz and bake the dough. And why is it impossible for him to do that? In other words, the normal alternative, what would have been in this scenario, to take the dough, and put it directly into the oven and immediately bake it, if he would have been available to do so. And then he would have completely circumvented the violation of chametz, because he would bake it before it became chametz. And the Brisa says he doesn't have that option. Why doesn't he have the option to bake his dough and arrest the process of chimutz? Because he's Yoshev Beis HaMedrash. Ah, says the Brisa, you know what? Since he's Yoshev Beis HaMedrash, and he doesn't have the possibility of baking the dough and preventing it from becoming chametz, so what does he do? The answer is, Shema Minah, he recites Bittul, or again he thinks Bittul, and then he avoids any violation of Bal Yerov Eimatz, because the Bittul is Chal, the moment that it becomes chametz, or let's call it a second before it becomes chametz, and therefore he never violates Bal Yerov Eimatz. Again, if all things were equal, if it wasn't a case of Talmid Sheyoshev Bitok Beis HaMedrash, then he would have a simple solution to this problem. He all of a sudden reminds himself, wait a minute, I made a dough, this dough is about to rise. He can solve that problem by baking the dough in an oven. That would have guaranteed that it's matzah, not become chametz. He would not violate any possession over chametz. But now that he's not available, and he knows he has this dough, so the other alternative of baking the dough in the oven is not a possibility. He can't leave his Rebbe in the middle of a sentence. And therefore, the Braisa says, if it hasn't become chametz yet, then you go ahead and you mevatel the chametz.
It might also answer the question as to why does it say he mevatels it in his heart. Because Rav Acha ben Yaakov says that he's sitting before his Rebbe learning.
Right.
So you don't want to start suddenly...
Interrupt, you mean verbally? You mean?
Exactly.
Ah, so then, Michael, what you're saying is the following, that if all things are equal in an ideal situation, then you'd be mevatel be'amira, and that's the Rashi that we saw on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. The Rashi says, v'omer kol chamira dika bershusik. But in a pressing situation where he doesn't have the option of amira, we're going to fall back on what Rashi calls hashbasa b'lid.
But how can you call it chametz and not chametz yet? How can you mean vato something?
Right. So that's why I suggested before, that's for the 11:45 shit. There's something called a maisa bittul, but the chalos bittul is only chal when it becomes chametz. I'll give you an example. We do bittul, let's say we do bittul twice, whether it's bittul at night after bedika, whether it's a bittul before sreifa. Those bittuls are also really before it became chametz. But the answer is, that's the Ramban Shita, that you can do an active bittul, but the bittul only takes effect when it becomes chametz. Are you familiar with the phrase Gito v'yodo bon ka'achas? Which is another fancy way of saying simultaneity. There's something in halacha called simultaneity, and in the case of bittul, the bittul is chal simultaneous with the shem chametz. Again, it can't be one split second, a fraction of a second later, because then you violate ownership of the chametz. It can't be earlier, because it's not yet chametz. So there's going to be what's called a bavas achas, in which the bittul will take effect. Now again, all this presumes that he doesn't change his mind. If he does bittul and then he rescinds his das and he revokes his original position, then the whole bittul is gone. But as long as he does nothing, he's totally passive and he leaves the bittul in place, then that bittul will be tofes, it'll be chal at the moment when it becomes chametz. David?
If it's yontov and he remembers too late and now it's mamash chametz, is he out of luck? Can he still bittul it?
No, then it's too late for bittul. Too late for bittul, because again, the Gemara is maintaining its original premise. There's no bittul after Shas Yisura. What he would have to do in that case is he would have to burn it. And again, here, there's an interesting diyun in the poskim, and it has many different dimensions to it. Can he tell his Rebbe, every second that I'm hearing a great shiur from you, but every second that passes by, I'm violating by your Rabbi Matzah because it became chametz. I got to destroy my chametz. Then we have a different question, and that's Rabbi Akiva that we learned on Daf Dalet. Is he allowed to burn his chametz on Yontif? And if we hold Havara Le Chalek Yotzis, which means that Havara is 139 Malachas on Yontif, how could he violate that? Is it called Tzarech Hayom? Is there Mitoch? And the whole business that we had over there. So assuming like Rabbi Akiva, there's no hetter to burn the chametz, then the best he can do at that point is just to put up a mechitza, if you remember, in order to separate so he doesn't... But technically he's... Again, onus rachmana patra, you know, it's mitigating circumstance beyond his control. The halacha ties his hands here and says that he's not allowed to destroy the chametz. But again, even though Rabbi Akiva would maintain that position, I think, la halacha, we don't accept Rabbi Akiva. Either we accept mitoch, and if you remember, Tosa says that in order to circumvent Bal Yerov Eimatzah, that's called Litzarech Hayom, so we can apply the principle of mitoch. Or alternatively, we might be holding that Havara L'lav Yotzis, which means that it's not even an Iser Malach on Yontif. The problem might be Muktzah, And once again, we're going to have to override the Isur Mukta because of the Isur Doraisa Val Yerobayim Motz. Now, in the case of Shabbos, we have a different situation because that, the Gemara says, is Erev Pesach. So that's okay. Now, it's interesting that you could be Mevatel Chametz on Shabbos. I don't think that that's our minhag. I don't have to check this out. We try to avoid bittul on chametz. But again, this might come back to our other issue about whether it's bittul b'lev or bittul b'amira. Because on Shabbos we have what's called the Dabru Dover, Shaloye Diburcha, Shal Shabbos Ki Diburcha, Shal Chol. So maybe bittul. Now, again, this is really complicated because it might depend on the machlokas between the Ramban and Tosus. Tosus identifies bittul as what? Hefker. Hefker on Shabbos is a no-no. And that's what the Ramban makes a big deal. How could our Gemara... This is one of the proofs of the Ramban against Tosfos. He reminds himself that he has chametz on Shabbos and he's mevatel it. How could you mevatel if it's hefker? We don't have hefker on Shabbos. There's no such thing as hefker on Shabbos. Meaning, the halacha doesn't allow you to be mafker. So, says the Ramban, the reason why it's mutar on Shabbos is because bittul is not hefker. Bittul is hafkar shame chametz. Okay. Now we get to have spoiled chametz. Yeah? Omar Rabba Barbahuna Omar Rab. Right? Ha Pasha Ipsha. Now, what's Pasha Ipsha? So let's give a few, just a little bit of a framework here. We have something which the Gemara later is going to call the Teva. Excuse me, a Teva. Right? Tough Yud Beis Hey. A Teva is a box. Right? What do you call it? A carton or... What do you call those bread baskets? You know what I'm saying? Those things. I remember in my mother's house, you know, 50 years ago, we used to have that
bread basket.
Bread basket, you know, you open it up, you know, that's where we keep the bread. And of course, mom wants us to eat yesterday's bread because that's getting spoiled. She doesn't want us to eat the fresh bread. We want to eat the fresh bread. So that's called a teva. Now, what does he find inside the teva? He finds something which is unidentifiable. What do I mean? He doesn't know whether it's chametz or matzah. Now again, in our reality, this whole Gemara makes no sense. So the Rishonim say that back in the time of the Gemara, their matzah looked a lot different. It was very thick. It looked a lot different than our matzah. You'll see it amongst the Yemenites. I remember the first time I saw this, we were at the Botanical Gardens here in Jerusalem, and I see a family eating chametz on Pesach, and mamash got sick from it, and they were wearing kippot. And then I realized that somebody tipped me off that these were Yemenites, and they have a whole different kind of matzah. So in any event, it's unidentifiable, because once the spoilage process begins, You cannot really know whether it's matzah or chametz. So what do you do? Now, in a case of suffek, we have to implement the general rules that apply. This comes from Shulchan Aruch Yoredeha to be machriya suffek. The most fundamental rule in sfeikus is called rov. The Torah says achiram lahatos, and the question is: this teva, what does he put into the teva? And the answer is that for 300 and, I don't know, when do they start baking matzahs? Let's say, I don't know, a week before Pesach. So for 355 days out of the year, or 350 days out of the year, he uses this teva for what? For chametz. Oh. Comes along Rav Huna, in the name of Rav, and he says the following. Kevan sheribsa lematza, kevan sheribsa matza, muteres. Okay, now what does this mean? Take a look at Rashi. Now, in order to find Rashi, you've got to find the midpoint in Rashi, so to speak, on this daf. Kevan sheribsa matza. Anybody have a shortcut how to find it? You know, if we one day we're going to get to be so sophisticated that I can show you on the blackboard, you know, I'll just have to press a button and it'll light up or something, but we don't have that yet.
He lines up from the small lines to the end of the small lines, so that's the Gemara.
So I don't have the same Tursa Daf as you.
Smallest, In other words, the,
I have skinny lines that, that take up like 80% of the page.
Right, so but it then turns to large lines.
Wide lines on the bottom.
Wide lines go up eight from the wide lines.
Ah, so again, I have a different susa daf. In my daf, it's like amongst the thin lines. It's almost like halfway in the middle. Kevin Sherub some matzah says Rashi kasalka daita. At this point in the Gemara's discussion, and the Gemara is going to retract this. In nishtamshu b'teva zu matzah yoser michametz. Now this is very interesting. Apparently, they had certain tevos that were dedicated. I wouldn't say exclusively, but the majority was for matzah use.
You would never ever, I think, use a bread box that you've used all year for bread. You would never ever put your matzah in there.
Why not? Jewish housewives have changed.
Who would do that?
Why not?
Is the question the whole year round, or is the question going to be
a specific point? Okay, so the Gemara later on is going to backtrack, but at this point we're looking at the use of the table the whole year round. Then we're going to take the number 365 and figure out where the majority is. And Rav says that in the Shtamshu B'teva Zu, if during the course of the year they use this mostly, predominantly for what? For matzah, okay. So this is the, you know, this has a mem on it as opposed to the other one that says a ches on it. Is then as linen basarubo, we apply the universal principle of sphakis, which is called rov uteres, meaning I can assume it's what
matzah.
It's matzah. Now on this line of the Gemara, there's a gigantic debate amongst the Rishonim, and it goes all the way down to the poskim. What does Rav mean? Does Rav mean that I'm going to eat this piece on Pesach? And some actually maintain that. Because the Torah says I rely on Rov, I rely on Rov. Others say no. What it means is that you're allowed to eat it after Pesach. Now you might ask me, who cares? If it's after Pesach, I mean I can eat chametz, I can eat matzah. What difference does it make? You want to determine based on Rov that it's matzah. So this has to do with the sugya on the second parak, which is called chametz she'ovrel ov ha-Pesach. That if you're in possession of chametz, and again you have to know many, many different variables, when and how, then that chametz, if it lasts over Pesach, has to be destroyed after Pesach. You're not allowed to have benefit from that chametz. Whether that's the Raisa, whether it's the Rabbanon, is it a Knas? That's against the sugya in the second parak. But be that as it may, we're not sure exactly what the Gemara means. According to those poskim who say that you're allowed to use it after Pesach, then what it means is that we're more makil after Pesach, because even though there's an Iser of Chometz she'ovrel ov ha-Pesach, it's not on the same level of severity as Chometz on Pesach. Chometz on Pesach is called what? An Iser Karetz. Chometz after Pesach is called an Iser, maybe a Lav in the worst case, maybe it's only Durabbanon, maybe it's even less than a Durabbanon, it's only a Knas. Again, there are various levels. But in it, whatever it is, it's not an Iser Karetz. So the Gemara wants to clarify this.
Why would you want to eat a piece of spot? Why would you want to eat a piece of moldy matzah? Let alone leave it for another 5 days.
Right, well maybe you want to feed it to your dog. You know what I'm saying? The question is now, Isuri Hana. Maybe it's not so spoiled that it's unedible, because if it's unedible, maybe you don't violate by your matzah. The spoilage here is not an indication, again, for you and I, it would be an indication of which piece we'd want to eat. But that's not what the Gemara is operating with. The Gemara is operating with spoilage as an indication that I don't know simply. I cannot identify the nature of the object. You know, what are you? Are you? I'm talking to this object, again, Walt Disney, and I'm asking, are you chametz or are you matzah? And I don't hear any response. All I hear is spoilage. And when I see the spoilage, I don't know what's going on. So Rav Bosai, at this point in the sugya, the word spoilage or pasha ipsha is indicative of confusion, meaning of the lack of certainty. Later on you'll see that the Gemara is going to reinterpret the word ipsha, not literally, but I mean in terms of its meaning, that ipsha itself is going to be an indication as to whether it's chametz or not. But we're not ready for that yet. So Gemara says, hey chidom. Now here the Gemara says, ilema. I have to admit to you, Rabosai, that the word ilema is a little bit peculiar in this context, because ilema, usually, 99% of the time in Shas, the word ilema introduces what we call a havamina. And a havamina is something very, very serious. Here, I think ilema the Gemara is just calculating, meaning it's not, it's the, don't stop in the middle of this Elam and say, oh, the Gemara really thinks Elam the yada beit chametzu. Now, if we're talking about a case where he knows it's chametz, obviously he doesn't know it's chametz. The whole brisa, I'm sorry, the whole statement of Rav is addressing the laws of Sfeikus, and we're using Rov to be Machri and Sofet. He says, ki Rav sa matzah my havi. If he knows it's chametz, he can identify it, so who cares if he uses this teva? Most of the time during the year, he uses it for matzah. So again, Rav Osei, I'm going to submit to you, again, this may be my ignorance, I don't know if anybody is going to say otherwise, that this word Elam was not the classical Elam. We're not talking about a serious Hava meaning. There was no serious Hava meaning that he knew it was Chavetz. If he identifies it as Chavetz, it's Chavetz. I mean, there's nothing to talk about. Ella, what does it mean, Pasha Ipsha? De lo yadinen bei I Chavetzu I Matzahu. The spoilage has created a confusion. And we have no certainty. We cannot look at the piece of pastry and decide to ourselves, make an evaluation, this is matzah or this is chametz. Again, given that back in the day they had very thick matzahs. So what do you do if you're uncertain? We have, as Rashi says, the principle of Zlinon, Basa, Ruba, the Torah says you can rely on Rov. The Gemara says the following. I don't understand. My iria ki Rav sa matzah. Why do you have to tell me that the reason why I'm allowed to eat this piece, let's go according to the simple pshat in the Rishonim that I can eat it now on Pesach, is because of Rav Sa Matzah, that the Rav, most of the use of this teva during the course of the year is for matzah. This is why, you know, this is the breadbasket that says the word, the letter M, Mem on it, it's matzah. Afil ki lo Rav Sa Matzah, Nami. Gemara says I have something that's even more powerful than Rav. And this is one of the most famous three words in Shas. Nasal basar basra. I would ask you to highlight that with every color in the rainbow. And that is called basra. Basra means the following. I look at the last use. I'll give you an example, Rabosai, from Elul Mitzvahs. We all learned Elul Mitzvahs, our first Gemara that we learned in fourth grade. So I go into a hotel room. And lo and behold, and nowadays it's very rare that this would happen, but it could happen. And I find an object. Now, I don't know whether this object belongs to a guy or belongs to a Jew. And the difference is going to be that if it belongs to a guy, then I could pocket it. Again, if I know which guy it belongs to, that's already Ava. Ava means I have to worry about, you know, antagonism. I don't want to antagonize the guy, so I'll give it back to the trifle. But let's say, you know, if I don't know who's, you know, which guy it belongs to, I'm allowed to pocket it. And that's called Rov Aku. But in this case, I'm not going to rely on Rov because the last person to live in that hotel room was a Yid. And therefore, I'm chayiv in Hashavas Avit. That's called, in the Gemara's language, Azlinon Basar Basra. That even though Rov reigns supreme as a hachras sveikus in Kol Tarkula, there's one exception, and that's called Basra. Basra means, now here we have a machlokas, which is very fundamental. There are two ways of learning Basra. One way of learning Basra is that it creates a Rov unto itself. And that Rove is more convincing and more powerful than the classical Rove. So even though most of the usage of this hotel room is Gayu, you know, you're in Phuket, you know, out in the east, and most of the people, yeah, okay, that could be. But the last person was in Israel. So it could be that, you know, we clean out the hotel room on a daily basis. Maybe she didn't do such a good job on this particular occasion, you know, and I find a diamond ring, you know, it's worth a lot of money. Am I chayiv in Hashavas Avedim? So the Basra creates a Rove that's so powerful that it overwhelms the classical Rove. So most of the year, there are goyim who occupy this room, but the last person to occupy the room was a Jew, and therefore I'm chayiv in Hashavas Avedim. That would be one way of learning Basra. Another way of learning Basra is to say that the halacha of Basra is a power unto itself. Is a new halacha which we're going to derive from Psukim, Okay, we'll have to see where these psukim are. It's a sugi vegla rufa, whatever it might be. That there's a law called Basra. And Basra has is higher up on the totem pole than Rov. The Gemara here, in its question, its objection to Rav, has a premise in its back pocket. And that premise is that Basra overwhelms Rov. Basra is more powerful than Rov. Is it because Basra itself is a Rov and it's a more logical and reliable Rov? Is it because it's a separate halacha, a category called Basra? Das Vesichlisht, I don't know. But the Gemara says that if you have Rov and Basra, we go Basra Basra. So for example, Rabosai, when people were chayev in Maaser Sheni, what do I mean? They had to bring on the first, second, fourth, and fifth years of the Shemitah, like that, to bring 10% of their produce to Yerushalayim. They couldn't bring such a massive amount to Yerushalayim, so the Torah says, "Vitzarta akesav yodech," you can do what's called a pigeon. So they brought all these most to Yerushalayim. When did they come? On Aliyah LeRegel, you know, when the prices of the hotels go up. Well, I hate to say it, but this time of the year they went up not because of Aliyah LeRegel, but for a different holiday, but we won't mention that. Anyway, so now this massive amount of coins in Yerushalayim that's being brought there for the regal, and I find a coin in Yerushalayim. Now it could be that if I look at the coins in Yerushalayim over the course of the entire year, the Rov is not going to be my sushen. But if I look at the Basra, because now we're holding at the Aliyah LeRegel time, then there's a massive amount, an unusual preponderant majority of coins that are Maaser Sheni coins. So what do we do with the Maaser Sheni coins? We have to buy food in Yerushalayim. Now this is wonderful. Maybe imagine mice. You're talking about a significant amount of money. You know, I would. You know, when they Mirz Hashem, when they build the Beis Hamikdash, I'm investing in everyone has their own favorite restaurant, but I mean, mine was Mamma Mia's, unfortunately went out of business, but you know, restaurants here in the city come in and go out like the flash of a light. I heard that Benny's Fish is out of business. Oh, yeah. It is? And that makes me cry. I mean, Benny. I remember as a 16-year-old eating Benny's Fish, you know what I'm saying? But in any event, all these landmarks. So I would invest in the restaurant business, because all this massive amount of Maaser Sheni is going to be used for what? To buy food. However, here we have to know a little bit of Masechta Zvachim. When the Olei Regel realized that no matter how much they're eating away there with the Maaser Sheni money, they couldn't use up all the Maaser Sheni with such a massive amount of money. What they did was they gave their surplus Maaser Sheni money to their fellow Yerushalmis, and you know, this was sort of like an honor and a respect that they paid to the people who live in the holy city of Yerushalayim. And the Gemara says in Zvachim that Maaser Sheni money can be used to buy what's called a Karban Shlamim. So for that we'd have to learn Zvachim. But be that as it may, so now what happens is people are standing online buying animals. Why are they buying animals? Because they were left with all the surplus Maaser Sheni money, and they're going to use the Maaser Sheni money to buy animals. And these animals are going to be brought on the Mizbeach as Karban Shlamim. So now I find coins during this period of time when all of Eretz Yisrael is bringing its Maaser Sheni money to Yerushalayim three times a year when they come on Aliyah LeRegel, and the surplus Maaser Sheni money is being used to buy animals for Shlomim, and now I find coins. So if I found that those coins on Tu Bishvat, then I would assume they're chun, they're not Maaser Sheni. But if I find them on Erev Pesach, or on Erev Shavuos, Erev Sukkos, then Azlinan Basar Basra. In other words, even though the rove of the coins over the course of the year is what? Is chulin. But now, at this particular moment in time, all the chulin is gone, and there's a massive amount of money that fell from the pockets of all these Jews that are waiting online to buy animals, and therefore Azlinan Basar Basra and therefore we assume that these Mos are Maaser Sheni. That's going to be the status of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is going to change its status as far as found coins. If you find coins in Yerushalayim the whole year round, you assume it's Rov. Rov means Mos Chulin. But during these particular periods of time, Shalosh Regolim, we're going to apply the principle of Hazlinim Basra Basra, and there's a massive amount of Maaser Sheni Geld in the streets of Yerushalayim, and therefore I'm going to have to assume it's Maaser Sheni. That's going to be a collision with Rav's principle, because Rav says, I look at this teva and I ask myself, what do I usually put into the teva? And if I put into the teva matzah, then I'm going to assume it's matzah, even though on occasion I use it for what? For chametz. And I have this piece of pashimsha which is unidentifiable. So Rav says, let's apply the principle as lidan basar ruba. He's totally oblivious to the principle of basra. That what was the last thing you used over here? So, for example, if it's a week before Pesach, then it's maybe the last thing he put into that box was chametz. If it's Erev Pesach, you know, we get very close to Pesach, then the last thing he put in is matzah. But don't tell me that I'm going to look at the use of this teva during the course of the year. I want to know what's the last thing he put into the teva. Now, again, if he doesn't know, that's another sugya. Can we go back to Rov when the basra is unknown? That might depend upon the two definitions that we operated before on basra, but that's not for us now. So let's assume that there's at least a logical, plausible possibility that he would know what the last thing he put into this box is, and that generates halacha of what? Of basra. Why is Rav totally oblivious to the halacha of basra? Just give me a minute. Milo Tana, don't we have a Mishnah? In Masechta Maaser Sheni, it says, Mos Shenimtzu Lifnei Sochrei Behema B'Yerushalayim. If he finds Mos in front of the animal sellers in Yerushalayim, is Li Olam Maaser. Maaser means Maaser Sheni. And why is this? Because the people of Israel, at least during the regal period, they bring massive amount of Mos Maaser Sheni to Yerushalayim, and if they don't use up this Maaser Sheni, they leave it in Yerushalayim with the local Yerushalmim, you know, the guys who are wearing those gold stripe, you know, the white and gold striped things. I'm just kidding. Anyway, you leave it with your friends in Yerushalayim, and they are going to buy Behemos Shlomim, and therefore, during this period of time, which is called the Shas HaRegel, we can really assume that even though during the course of the year it's chulin because of the rove, but during this period of time we go basar basra, and therefore we have to assume it's Maaser Sheni. Now the exception to this rule is Harabais. On Harabais, even during the period of Regel, we assume that the coins are chulin. And the Gemara is going to try to explain this immediately. Oh, but as far as Yerushalayim is concerned, is b'shas haregel meiser, b'shayimos hashana chulim. So now what happens in Yerushalayim? It depends on what time of the year you find the most. Why is that logical? Omer av shmaya bar zera, my time, why is it depend upon whether it's shas haregel or if it's not shas haregel? And the answer is, Hoel v'shuke Yerushalayim asuyim liskabe b'chol yom. They were very meticulous, as they are today, of course. Yeah. I'm being a little facetious, of cleaning the streets of Yerushalayim. And therefore, we're not going to look at the whole year round and say that these mos came from the whole year round, but rather we're going to look at the basra. Alma Amrina and Kamoy Kamoy Azli Mahani Achrini Ninhu. In other words, we're going to assume that all the coins from the massive amount of coins that might have fallen on the streets of Yerushalayim during the course of the year were cleaned away. And now we're going to focus on the very last moment when the coins fell or may have fallen. And we're going to say that the original coins are gone, but Achrinu Vahani, but these coins that he finds now, Achrini Ninu, and now we're talking about Shas HaRegel, and if it's Shas HaRegel, we're going to go Basar Basra, and now is where, at this particular period of time in the calendar year, there's a massive amount of Maaser Sheni Mos. Says the Gemara, Achanami, let's see the parallel in the case of the Teva, where you find the Pasha Ibsha. Neima, why not say, Kama Kama Azil? And Rashi here gives a whole explanation as to why we assume kama kama ozil. And the answer is, says Rashi, as we'll soon see, a person will want to first eat up, or at least the master of the house, will want us to eat up the old pas, yesterday's pas, right? Because that one is getting spoiled. So we want to, you know, cut our, cut damages? What's the phrase I'm looking for?
Cut our losses.
What do you say?
Cut our losses.
Cut our losses. So therefore, let's use up the old bread first. Don't jump to the fresh bread. And how much more so, again, in the case where we're getting close to Pesach, they obviously want to get rid of the old chametz first, because that's chametz, and he's even checking his house for chametz. So high, when he finds this unidentified pas, this pasha ipsha, is the idnu. It's the last, you know, the last usage. So the latest usage is clearly going to be matzah, because again, the old chametz that he put into this teva is kama kama ozil. It was removed, because the first thing when he puts his hand into the teva that he wants to get rid of is the old chametz. So it's obviously that we're talking about the more recent use of the teva, the more recent use of the teva, since we're very close to Pesach, or maybe we're on Pesach, is going to be matzah. So therefore the Gemara says, I don't understand, why is it that you insist, Rav, that we go basar rov? Why do we care about what happened yesterday, or what happened a month ago, or during the whole course of the year? What does he do, and what does he put into this teva? What I care about is what he last put into the teva, that's called basra, just like in the case of Mos in Yerushalayim, we assume during the Shasa Regel, that these Mos fell from the Ole Regel, who are coming en masse to bring their Maisa Sheni money, and they're leaving this surplus money with the Anshe Yerushalayim, they're buying behemoths, so we found these most. We assume that they're Maisa Sheni during these periods of time, because that's called Azlin and Basra Basra. The same thing should apply in the case of a Teva. We get rid of the old pastries, which are chametz, and then we should look at what we're most recently using this teva for, and it's now dedicated for matzah because we're either erev Pesach or maybe even on Pesach. And the question is, why does Rav introduce this concept of rov, and he totally ignores the principle of basra? Okay, there, Rabosai. So we're about halfway through the sugya. I got lucky, and the bell rang, because the sugya gets even more complicated as we go along. But all I'm asking you to take from the sugya, so that tomorrow we can get back into this, is this conflict between rov, in which we look at the whole year, and basra, when we look at the last period of time. Okay, there, Rabosai? Okay.